Well, I will go on here and read.
If the question is, what is Daniel's second vision? Really, we should word it, what is the second vision in Daniel? That, of course, is the seventh chapter. Why is it so different? Why is that so different, Daniel's vision, from the vision that Nebuchadnezzar had? I guess we will leave that off. And let's look for a few moments at some of these historical chapters that we looked into. This is just a little bit of a refresher. Help. You think Nebuchadnezzar was impressed when he was told, you're that head of gold? One thing that is very impressive is that the times of the Gentiles begins and ends with a great image. The image of the Antichrist will be set up in the temple in Jerusalem. There will be authority in the hands of the second beast to demand that people worship that and that they can be put to death if they do not. And of course, that's what Nebuchadnezzar did in the third chapter. Where did he set up his golden image? Yes, in the plains of Dura, where he must have been able to see it for miles, and he must have called an awful lot of people. We have the officials mentioned, but in no doubt there were many others that were there, perhaps out of curiosity, perhaps sincerely to worship the image, I do not know, but anyway, I do not doubt but what there were many others there. Did he accompany this dedication with lots of music? Christianity Today, if you ever read it, it says that the selling of sacred music has just about come to be a disgrace. In Tulsa, they used to have, weekly they had what they called the Battles of Song, and they got all the big quartets together, and they have made, I'll tell you one prominent quartet, I'm not going to name them, they're good singers. Brother Shibley, with whom I formerly worked, went to hear them, and he said they would have us, they'd sing a while, then they would take a smoking break, come back and sing. It would have been very inspirational, about like Balaam's preaching. How many in that vast crowd refused to worship the image? There were only three in the crowd, actually. We have no record of Daniel. Well, let's say that was in those that were gathered there. They had to be there. What do you think the ratio would be today? I know it would be larger than that, of course. I read this past week of two men in the days of Bloody Mary in England when she started her severe persecution. There were two men talking, and one of them was just scared half to death. The other said, well, man, you don't have anything to be afraid of. He said, look at me. He said, I'm twice as big as you are. They can see me so easily. But he said, they'll eat the last bite of my flesh before I'll give in to them. And when it came to being burned at the stake, guess which one? The man that had no courage. The man that was so bold to say they'd eat the last bit of his flesh before he'd give in, became a turncoat. His courage failed him. Remember the song, others there are full of courage and zeal who go to the battle like warriors of steel, and right in the heat of the conflict with sin, instead of believing, they faint and give in. Three men, if they had gone along with it, they didn't have to actually worship the image, would we have this chapter in the Bible? No, it wouldn't be here. You believe actually that the Son of God came to be with them in the furnace? I believe he did. Now Nebuchadnezzar, what he actually said, it more like the Hebrew is, like unto a son of the gods. He didn't know anything about the Son of God as we know him. And so, did this have a good effect on Nebuchadnezzar? He was utterly defeated, wasn't he? For those that just came in, we're just concluding the last part of the third chapter. How many times is it recorded that God spoke to Nebuchadnezzar? That is, by providence or by dream or by this miracle. For example, the dream image was one. What others? This one and the dream of the fourth chapter. Whose testimony is personally given in the fourth chapter? Surely interesting, isn't it? I thought it good to show. What form did the dream take? What was it like? The first dream was an image. What was this one? It was a tree. Who did Daniel say the tree was? Yes, Nebuchadnezzar. The Gentiles have totally failed as nations to admit that they have a dominion from God. I'll tell you, according to the book of Revelation, when God gets through with them, it's going to be very easy to count them. Taking a census in America is a tremendous job, but when God gets through, except those days should be shortened, there would no flesh be saved. Revelation 6 says a fourth part. Revelation 9 says a third part. And the judgment of Matthew 25 hasn't taken place yet, and neither has Armageddon. So I just assume that after that battle of Armageddon, there'll be more widows and orphans than there's ever been in the history of the world. You know, the men that make the most widows and orphans are the Greek people, Alexander the Great, Charlemagne, and others. They killed off the men. It'll be such that Isaiah said 10 women will take hold of the coat of one man. There just won't be any men left. So that's the way God is going to treat them. And did God again allow them to call all the wisdom of the Chaldeans before they finally got around to Daniel? Is this the way people do? I guess I quoted it to you, God and the soldier we adore, time of danger not before, the danger past and all times righted. God is forgotten and the soldier slighted. Only I changed it and said, God and his servants we adore, in time of danger not before, the danger past and all things righted. God is forgotten and his servants slighted. Well, they just seemingly left Daniel out of it, but the time came when they had to bring him in again. What did Nebuchadnezzar see that said, cut down the vision, or cut down the tree? What did he call them? Yes, the holy watchers, plural in the 17th verse. I suppose they were angelic beings. The book of Daniel, the book of Revelation, and other sections show that angelic beings, good and bad, are very active, though invisible. In a later chapter of Revelation, we'll read of the angel that said, the prince of Persia withstood me 21 days, and when he's through, I'm going to go fight with the prince of Grecia. And he calls Michael your prince, and he's the only one that stands with me in these things. And in Revelation, we see so much of this. The map of the earth, the kingdom on the earth had 7 heads and 10 horns, and the great red dragon in heaven had 7 heads and 10 horns. So it seems from this that the devil has an active prince. Remember, he is Beelzebub, the prince of the devils. He is the prince of the power of the air, and 3 times he's called the prince of the world, and 1 time the god of the world. And so what happened to Nebuchadnezzar? I mean, what judgment fell on him? Yes, he had a form of bestial insanity. There is a word in our language, a feral child, is a child that's been around beasts so much that he'd rather be around a beast than a human being. Evidently, Nebuchadnezzar thought he was a beast. So deeply sad. Remember the man in Mark 5, so totally demon-possessed. I do not say that Nebuchadnezzar was demon-possessed. I don't know. That man so totally demon-possessed that he couldn't be bound. He wear no clothes. You see who's back of public nakedness? Demon-possessed man in Mark 5, wore no clothes. And Nebuchadnezzar had a form of what I call bestial insanity as a judgment. Aren't God's judgments interesting? We need never think in any way that God approves sin. I would hate to have to suffer what David endured. He lost his baby. That'd be enough to kill you. Then the Lord said, the sword shall never depart from your house. One time I started to preach on the wars that came on David's descendants, and there were so many of them, I gave up. The sword never did. And in fact, in the days of the Roman Empire, because the descendants of David caused so much trouble, a Jew told me that all the house of David was destroyed. Of course, I know that isn't true, but they did try to destroy every descendant of David. How long was it before he was judged? 12 months, that's right. Can you think of a limitation like this that God put on anything else or any other people in the Bible? Judgment? 40 days. But he didn't destroy it, they repented. Anything else? The flood, 120 years. Belshazzar got less than 12 hours, didn't he? Well, going on to the 5th chapter, what king have we here? Belshazzar. Is he the last of the kings of Babylon? Yes, he was the last of the kings of, he was the last of the Babylonian Empire. Later, Darius reigned from Jerusalem, but he was of the Mede and Persian Empire. Can you mention any other king that is mentioned in the Bible, but not in this book, that reigned in Babylon? Yes, I used to call it Merodach, but I noticed that the proper pronunciation gives it a different emphasis, and I've forgotten what it is, but he's mentioned 2 different places. Then there were 2 short-term kings that are not mentioned in the Bible, but Nebuchadnezzar and evil Merodach, the word evil there meaning a proper name, not moral evil. And then this man reigned subject to his father for some 17 years, I believe. That's why he offered Daniel the 3rd place in the kingdom. If he'd have been supreme, he could have offered him the second place, but he wasn't. He reigned subject to his father. We know this from sources outside the Bible, for example, the findings of the archaeologists. What did he do at this time? What was he doing in this early part of this fifth chapter? And it was a feast, wasn't it? My, 1,000 of his lords. This is, according to other sources, this was an annual feast. What blasphemous course of action did he take at this point? And they praised other gods. What did God do at this time? Sent a hand. I don't know that I could think of something any more scary, do you? What do you think your reaction would be if somebody look over there and kind of yell and there'd be a hand going across the wall over there writing? What do you think your reaction would be? Now, I know that I'm saved, but I think I'd get on my knees. And I wouldn't. I don't think my knees is. I'd get deeply concerned. I don't think my knees is might one against the other. Did this work a change in the king? I mean, did in his outward conduct and all? What about his thoughts? What about his joints? Heard a man say one time, my knees were like they're picking banjo strings. He meant his knees were wobbly. Well, that's what happened to this poor fellow. To whom did he turn to get a help on this? He just seemingly couldn't give up on those charlatans. Notice I make him the third ruler in the kingdom. He didn't say the second, because he himself was second. Who came into the room? I don't mean you give her name because it isn't given, but who came into the room at this time and tried to help him out? The queen. Now, you see, she was the real queen. She wasn't in the feast. His wives and concubines were here. Who did she recommend that he turn to? Still, she calls him of the captivity of Judah in the 13th verse. And did Daniel take as kindly an attitude to him as he had to Nebuchadnezzar when he interpreted his dream? No, he talked very straight to him. He told him he mentioned that Nebuchadnezzar's mind being hardened in pride in the 20th verse. Isn't pride a strange thing? Seemed to have been that which was the cause of the downfall of Satan, according to Timothy. That is, in appointing elders, he said, not a novice, lest being lifted up with pride, he fall into the condemnation of the devil. And in the 22nd verse, he lets him know that he hadn't humbled his heart, that he'd lifted up himself against the Lord of heaven. Isn't that an awful thing to do? Better walk out and slap a vicious bull in the face, grab a big rattlesnake by the tail, crawl in the cage of the lion. And when it comes to facing the Lord, in Revelation 6, I read of the great men, the mighty men, the captains, the kings, choosing death rather than facing him. They go to the caves and they cry to the rocks and the mountains to hide them from the face of him that sitteth upon the throne and from the Lamb. And they bring up that great question, who shall be able to stand? And what was the writing? Verse 25, meeni, meeni, tekel, upharsin. The word translated upharsin means split up or divided, according to one of my dictionaries, that is the Hebrew. The word pires and upharsin are just forms of the same word, like, let's say, go, went, gone. They don't resemble each other, but they're the same word. And in your Strong's Concordance, you'll find that they'll cite you to the same number. Weighed, and of course, wanting, divided, or divisions. Then he begins to interpret it. Numbered is the first words. Numbered. God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Pires, Daniel puts it in the past tense. Thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Well, Belshazzar carried out his end of the deal and made Daniel the third ruler in the kingdom. But what good did it do? Did you ever hear how this kingdom was conquered so quickly? Yes, there was a king preceding this, according to Berosus, who is called the father of historians. He was in the 5th century before Christ. I believe Josephus mentions this too. I don't remember correctly. I looked it up in the various records, but a part of Babylon, below Babylon, had been just a morass that was continually flooded by the Euphrates River. And Babylon at this time was under siege, but they felt so confident that they thought they could go ahead with their great feast. In the meantime, the besiegers had turned the course of the river into this place. This king that had lived before Nebuchadnezzar had set up some great dams. Have you ever been in Amsterdam? The history is interesting, how the first dams began. But anyway, he turned the course of the river. There were two men that wanted to get vengeance on Belshazzar, and they went to the enemy's side. Now, this is history. This is not in the Bible. And in their carelessness, there were, I've forgotten how many great leave gates leading off from the river into the various streets. And this night, they had been left open. And these soldiers came in through the riverbed that had been emptied into other channels. And the city was taken before people were aware of what had happened. I want to read from Jeremiah, I believe it's 27. Well, that just says that God had given those nations to Nebuchadnezzar. I'm going to turn to the 51st chapter of the book of Jeremiah for just a minute. There are texts that show that this came about in such a surprise way. Jeremiah 51, we'll begin reading with verse 28. Prepare against her the nations with the kings of the Medes, the captains thereof, and all the rulers thereof, shall all the land and all the land of his dominion. Now, I might say that Persia was east on the north side of the Persian Gulf, and the Medes were a little bit further west and north. And all the land shall tremble and sorrow, for every purpose of the Lord shall be performed against Babylon, to make the land of Babylon a desolation without an inhabitant. The mighty men of Babylon have forborne to fight. They have remained in their holds. Their might hath failed. They became as women. They have burned her dwelling places. Her bars are broken. Now notice this. Host shall run to meet another, and one messenger to meet another, to say, to show the king of Babylon that his city is taken at one end. They took just the one end of it at first. And that the passages are stopped, and the reeds they have burned with fire, and the men of war are affrighted. Then I want to turn to Isaiah 21. Now this was spoken long before, and it too shows the destruction of Babylon and the terrible things that, some of the terrible things that took place there that night. Unless you've read the history of some of the awful sieges of the past, it's hard to comprehend, or even after you read them, it's hard to comprehend. Isaiah 21, the first verse, the burden of the desert of the sea, as whirlwinds in the south pass through, so it cometh from the desert, from a terrible land. A grievous vision is declared unto me. The treacherous dealer dealeth treacherously, and the spoiler spoileth. Go up, O Elam. This was right in next door to Media. Besiege, O Media, all the sighing thereof have I made to cease. Therefore are my loins filled with pain. Pangs have taken hold upon me as the pangs of a woman that travaileth. I was bowed down at the hearing of it. I was dismayed at the seeing of it. My heart panted. Fearfulness affrighted me. The night of my pleasure hath he turned into fear unto me. Prepare the table. Watch in the watchtower. Eat, drink, and rise, ye princes, and anoint the shield. For thus saith the Lord unto me, go set a watchman, let him declare what he seeth. And he saw a chariot with a couple of horsemen, a chariot of asses, and a chariot of camels, and he hearkened diligently with much heed. And he cried, a lion, my lord, I stand continually upon the watchtower in the daytime, and I am set in my ward whole nights. And behold, here cometh a chariot of men with a couple of horsemen. And he answered and said, Babylon is fallen, and all the graven images of her gods he hath broken under the ground. And then another text that I want to read to you in Jeremiah 50, 26. So much said about the fall of this city. And we'll turn for just a moment to Isaiah 13 in a moment. What did I say that was? Jeremiah 50, 26. It says this, come against her from the utmost border, open her storehouses, cast her up as heaps, and destroy her utterly, let nothing of her be left. He's talking about this of the Chaldeans according to verse 26. And I'm going to read just a passage in Isaiah 25, or 45 rather, Cyrus, what God was going to do. Now this is 100 years or more before Cyrus was born, more than 100 years. Thus saith the Lord to his anointed, I'm in Isaiah 45, 1, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him. Now notice, I will loose the loins of kings to open before him the two leave gates, and the gates shall not be shut. And that's exactly what happened. I will go before thee and make the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut in sunder the bars of iron. And I will give thee the treasures of darkness and hidden riches of secret places, that thou mayest know that I, the Lord, which call thee by thy name, am the God of Israel, For Jacob my servant's sake and Israel mine elect, I have even called thee by thy name. I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me. This is the man that released the Jews after these 70 years captivity. And then just a word from Isaiah 13. Now you're going to find in the course of your life that many Bible students, and some of them capable men, will tell you that the city Babylon on the Euphrates is going to be rebuilt. Well, there are several texts. I'll read from the 6th verse. Howl ye, is Isaiah 13, for the day of the Lord is at hand, it shall come as destruction from the Almighty. Therefore shall all hands be faint, and every man's heart shall melt. They shall be afraid. Pangs and sorrows shall take hold of them. And the 9th verse, the day of the Lord cometh cruel, and then the stars of the heavens. I will punish the world for their iniquity and their evil. And there is a text here somewhere that says that they would never be rebuilt again. I guess we'll have to pass that by for the moment. But you will find many that say that Babylon will be rebuilt and become a great power again. But God says, no, it will never be rebuilt again. Read it if you will.
It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Neither shall the Arabian pitch tent there, neither shall the shepherds make their fold there.
Now, almost the whole of Jeremiah 50 through 52 has to do with the downfall of Babylon, or very much of it, I'll put it that way. Revelation 17 and 18 have to do with what we call mystical Babylon. This is a religious affair, not the ancient city of Babylon on the Euphrates. Our brother just read that it would not be rebuilt and not inhabited again. Well, so much for that.